97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
They are at Chaffetz tonight. Nathaniel and his bass player, Joseph Pope. I've been texting with Joseph because they're local guys. You know, Nathaniel was in Denver for a long time and cut his teeth out there, but they are from Herman, Missouri, Nathaniel Ratliff and Joseph Pope.
I did not know that.
And so it was interesting. I was texting Joseph because last night I'm watching the show Bad Monkey, which has Vince Vaughn. I really kind of liked it on Apple TV+. And they did something very unique on the soundtrack of Bad Monkey. Most of the songs on the soundtrack, not all of them, but most of the songs that they play, certainly in the later part of the show, and every show it's like a 45-minute show, is a cover of a Tom Petty song. So they have all these artists, really kind of like modern-day artists, covering Tom Petty. Now, I'm a big Tom Petty fan, and I'm a little picky on some of these covers, and even with some of the bands that covered the songs, I wasn't a fan of. But there was a scene in the penultimate episode. I'm on the finale now last night, and I'm watching the scene, and I hear this. And it's Don't Come Around Here No More. And it's Nathaniel Ratliff. I looked it up. And it just, it's a very different version, but I'm telling you, the way that it played in a haunting way on the show, they just knocked it out of the park. And he's so great. You know, as a guy that really was into his upper 30s before he broke out commercially, there was a song called SOB probably about 10 years ago. Fred, you might remember. I tracked those guys down.
No, I remember.
This is one of my, you know, I do this with bands that I really like when they're just starting. I'm like, let's get them on the air if we can. And since they had the local connection, and Joseph and Nathaniel both knew of KMOX, so that's why they did it. But they have gone on to superstardom, and they're at Chaffetz tonight.
I didn't realize they're the same person. I remember that song, SOB. I remember when that got big, so that's interesting.
Well, because when you look for their music online, you'll find some from Nathaniel and then some from Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats, which is the band. So he's got a couple of solo things as well. All right, musically, there's an interesting blues story that I want you to share.
Yes, Ethan. So the blues recently, just a couple of nights ago, tweeted out. Actually, this was yesterday they tweeted out. So they just switched over to FanDuel Sports Network now. And there was this trunk they tweeted out that they left at their previous arena that they're at in Montreal.
Right.
They thought that they left it. The good thing is that they had an AirTag inside of it that revealed that it was sitting at a different arena in Quebec City. How did it get there? As it turns out, they said, rock band Evanescence played a concert at Bell Center in Montreal the night before the Blues game, and their crew accidentally grabbed it when they packed up after the show. Their tour went to Quebec City and then to Ottawa, where the Blues were headed next. The band was kind enough to leave it in Ottawa, and it was back in possession for last night's game just in time.
Crazy.
How about that?
That is a cool story.
Wow.
And then the other sports story that I wanted to touch on, we don't have a lot of time because I want to get to Sue's News. We got a lot going on. But the home, Fred, you were at the Fox last night.
Right,
but
I didn't see this.
There's a foul ball. Who hit the foul ball? Do you remember, Ethan?
Gleyber Torres, I believe.
And Mookie Betts goes to grab it. He catches the ball. But two Yankees fans, essentially, did you watch the video?
I did. Soon?
They almost break Mookie Betts' wrist trying to grab the ball.
Yeah, they did.
And then if you watch in slow motion, it's great because they act like they did nothing wrong. Here's the call.
Right by Torres. Betts in the corner. Does he have room? Fights with the fan.
Fights with the fan.
And they're going to say that it's an out. And fan interference.
It was fan interference. The second fan interference of this World Series, by the way.
And
but those fans are not going to be there for Game 5 tonight.
Both of them, I believe, were hit by Gleyber Torres as well.
What did
do
with interference? Did they? What happens?
Well, it's an
as far as the fans go,
so they
or
call it
the
an
result,
out?
It was an out.
Yeah.
It was an out, and then the fans were kicked out, and I believe that they were banned. MLB wants them to be banned from Yankee Stadium.
It's
they
quite
should
the
be.
Video.
They
yeah.
should be banned, but you know how it is. They're probably heroes in New York City today. That's what my guess would be. That's what I told Kilmeade. All right, we have maybe a bit of an accelerated Sue's News because we have Selena and Josh coming up, but let's get right to it here.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
All right, on this day in history, first of all, it's Candy Corn Day, wah, wah, and the only one who likes that is Ethan. We move on.
Thank
86
you.
Years ago today, in 1938, now I've heard this about, I've heard about this a lot, that Orson Welles made his infamous War of the Worlds radio broadcast, and of course it's a dramatization, they're actually reading from a story, but if you missed the intro of it, it caused like this huge panic because people thought the story was that Martians were coming. They were dropping things, bombs, and Martians were coming out and killing people. And so it's Orson Welles, and they do this whole radio broadcast. Here's a little bit of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson of the observatory at Princeton confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomenon as, quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote.
Okay.
We now return you to the music of Ramon Rockello, playing for you in the Meridian Room of the Park Plaza Hotel, situated in downtown New York.
Now that's exactly. That's how people thought it was so serious, because they were playing music and they would interrupt with these terrible updates about the Martians and killing people. It was crazy.
Do you, Ethan, have perspective on War of the Worlds as a young person here?
Very little.
Okay.
I want to say we did something very briefly at some point in early education, but I don't remember much.
Because we all grew up with knowing quite a bit about it.
Now, in this section, okay, Joe Sonderman has a book about this day in St. Louis history, and in it was a little bit about this today, and they say in St. Louis neighborhoods, here's what happened. CBS stations ran it, so KMOX ran it, but there was a big popular show on KSD at the time, and then people thought, you know, their neighbors were saying, hey, there's something going on, so they all switched to KMOX, missed the beginning, missed the disclaimer, and St. Louis was freaking out, too.
Oh, my goodness.
And really a nutso story, but that was 86 years ago today. All right, this one is music. 24 years ago today, this album was YouTube released this album with Beautiful Day on it. All That You Can't Leave Behind is 24 years old.
This is my favorite U2 record. It really is. And then maybe, you know, fans go back a little bit earlier than that. But this was the album that really grabbed me. And the first time that I saw him in concert was on this tour.
Wow.
Where was it at?
Bradley Center in Milwaukee when I saw
it. My mom saw them in Tallahassee at Dope Campbell where the Seminoles play. She said it was the first time she ever smelled marijuana.
Oh, wow.
She hadn't been around very much, had she?
No, she had not.
Aw. Well, and we've got more for Mark today because Forbes magazine has crowned Bruce Springsteen as a billionaire. Well, Bruce decided he would disagree. He says, quote, I'm not a billionaire. I wish I was, but they got that real wrong. I've spent way too much money on superfluous things.
Well, at least he's honest about that, right?
He added that if a musician's career becomes all about money, quote, that's usually where people go south.
I always wondered, though, you know, because when you're a parent, you want to make sure your kids are taken care of and help them out, but you don't want to just give them everything, right?
Right.
And, you know, I don't know if you know this, but his son is a New York City firefighter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Like
that's really kind of cool.
You know, tons of money or anything like that. But I don't know. Like, how do you? That's absolutely awesome that he's a firefighter. Yeah. But then his dad's worth maybe not a billion,
not
but $700 million.
Exactly.
Let's face it. Yeah.
You know,
okay.
I went to the Fox last night and I saw the Neil Diamond story, Beautiful Music.
How was
it?
I loved it. It was
really good. And the actors who portrayed the young Neil Diamond and the older Neil Diamond were really good. The voices were dead on. But the one thing that I learned there that I never really thought about too much is, you know, Neil Diamond said he was making tons and tons of money.
I bet.
But he says, you got to remember, he had tons and tons of people to support.
Well, that's right.
And equipment to move and sets to design and just all sorts of things you don't really realize.
And the tax man to pay and the agent to pay. Mm-hmm. All that, right.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
I think he's done okay for himself.
Yeah, he's done all right. A new social experiment, I thought we should all know this, has found that if you want to look hotter to other people, you just have to be a little kinder. Isn't that nice?
So that's my problem all these years.
That's what's happening.
Damn it.
According to the study, people judge other people who behave pro-socially as more attractive. And it might be because people also expect attractive people to behave more pro-socially. So do things like sharing and donating and volunteering. In other words, good-looking people are expected to be good people. So that is what you should do if you want to be more attractive to the peoples.
Fair enough.
Uh-huh. Now, of course, I have a thing on bad dreams, the common nightmares that people have for Halloween, but I'll save that for tomorrow. And we'll go to today's random fact. Finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. But I have so many that are good. Okay. All right. Broccoli is man-made. It was created by carefully breeding wild kale that had the right traits. And cauliflower and Brussels sprouts are also creations that humans have made out of putting things together. There wasn't broccoli in the wild when we got here. We kind of made it ourselves.
I guess that makes sense, but I've never known that, which is why it's a random fact, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, they always say you learn something new every day, and I have Sue Thomas to thank
for that. On this show, you absolutely learn something new every day. There you go. Thank you, Sue. That is awesome. We got Selena Zito coming up here, Josh Krasauer, Ted Nugent after 5 o'clock. And this band, Nathaniel Redliff and the Night Sweats, here tonight in St. Louis. They're from Herman, Missouri. They're at Chaffetz. Oh, I want to know Selena Zito's response to this.
Just the other day, a speaker at his rally called Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage. The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters. His demonization of Latinos is unconscionable, and it's un-American. It's totally contrary to everything we've done.
Hi, Selena. How are you this afternoon?
Gino, living the dream. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm keeping an eye on Pennsylvania like everyone is. And I really enjoyed your story. We don't really have time to probably get into all the details of Beverly Akins, but you wrote about this homecoming with J.D. Vance and what happened in Middletown, Ohio. I rather enjoyed that piece. It's very detailed, but I loved it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It was really a joy to interview her.
And one of the things that was, I want you to kind of share this story. You were covering J.D. Vance, maybe this was even before he was on The Ticket, and he goes into this class and he starts kind of dazzling the med school students.
Oh, yeah, no, he was a senator at that point, and he knew, it was probably like a couple months into his, in 2023, and he, or maybe 25, I don't know what year it is.
I get it.
And he went into this vo-tech class. And he sees this, you know, they're doing their finals, and it's for a surgical technician, and they have to draw blood. And the one girl was just shaking like a leaf, the one who was going to have her blood drawn. So he sat down and said, you know what, I got this. Why don't you draw my blood? And he rolled his sleeve up, and she was shaking so hard. And he said, my mom did this. She used to practice on us all the time. You're going to be fine. And if you don't get it the first time, I'll still be here. It was a really beautiful moment that, you know, a lot of people don't get to see.
But the reality of who J.D. Vance really is, I think people have seen that, right? And even some Democrats might have had to admit that they've seen that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they came out of the gate going after him when he was picked. And you would have thought he was the son of Satan by the way that they depicted him. And yet he, you know, he didn't. He's very unflappable. And when you're from Appalachia, you pretty much have to be as someone who is from here. And he just sort of, you know, bided his time. And when he, you know, he would just go and do these very hostile interviews. And he just handled it with grace.
He's done it all really well.
And with a smile.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been very impressed with him. I think even those of us, look, I was maybe in the Glenn Youngkin camp for a while, but I think J.D. Vance was a great pick. And look, if you're, I know that maybe people aren't deciding the election this, let's just compare and contrast the goofball on the other side, Tim Walz, who doesn't look in any way, shape, or form prepared for the world stage, and J.D. Vance tackling all these questions on a daily basis.
I mean, that was a really smart tactical move by the Trump campaign. Show that you're competent. Show that you can be competent with a smile on your face. And also show that you're serious, but also have a bit of a sense of humor.
So what is going on right now in Pennsylvania, and how do you see this wrapping up? One of the stories that came out yesterday was about maybe police shutting down a line to vote. My take on that was, well, let me see if there's more details on that. Are there shenanigans going on in Pennsylvania, and how do you feel here heading into the last 5 days?
Well, I would say that, you know, I would rather be him than her at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a very, very tight race. As far as the shenanigans go, that is not my area of expertise in terms of being able to dig in and get the answers. There are much finer investigative reporters than I am. But I'm the thing that the Trump campaign has done right this time is they have lawyers now as opposed to at the end.
Yeah, they're ready.
They had lawyers from the very, very beginning, and that's why you saw today that in Bucks County, it was decided that that they can have three more days of mail-in in-person voting because of some shenanigans that happened in Bucks County.
Is there any percentage chance that the state of Pennsylvania will have final election results by the end of Tuesday night or even the beginning of Wednesday morning?
Well, I think that if one of these two candidates ends up getting a surge at the end, and I'm curious to, I will tell you, on my drive home from Allentown today, I saw someone had a had two garbage cans out with bows on them.
Yes.
With bows on them and Trump signs on them. So, you know,
How do you think that plays, you know, this whole moment from the last 24 hours or so? Because it was all about MSG, and then it became about Trump being, you know, garbage and his supporters being garbage.
Well, here's the thing. I think that that the one was done by a comedian. Let's be honest.
Yep.
One was done by a comedian, not by a former president or a sitting president. And one was done by a sitting president. And it is incredibly believable because Biden has been, he is the guy who, you know, said they were going to, Romney and Republicans were going to lock people up in chains, right? Hillary has called them deplorables. He has called them Nazis and fascists and extremists. So garbage is kind of like right in line with how people believe that that Democrats and reporters who rushed to protect him and say it didn't happen, like the worst gaslight ever, because he's on audio saying it.
They had to look, Politico, what some of these supposed outlets that are journalistically based are doing right now with rewrites and editing and covering for him. I guess we've seen this for a long time, Selena, but they're reaching new levels. What is your sense of, because I'm feeling here in Missouri, and if I kind of feel the sense amongst my left-wing friends, the Trump derangement syndrome is at an all-time level, and you're seeing this even evident on CNN and some of the other places right now. I think there's a bit of a panic, but some of these people are not going to be willing to accept the fact that he wins this election if he wins this election. Now, some of the same thing might be said about the other side, but I feel we're at a very dangerous tipping point with this election.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. We're a mess. And much of that mess has been driven by my profession.
Yes.
And they should be accountable for creating this mess. Rather than just reporting what's going on, balls and strikes, they have been they have been taken aside and demonized half of the country. So there is a lot of accountability that needs to be taken in my profession, no matter who wins.
So what did you think about Jeff Bezos? Because that was a very interesting, you know, editorial that he wrote, which criticized journalism, the quality of journalism. But that's all been lost because it's all about the fact that they didn't endorse Trump. So you got all these people out there, the snowflakes are canceling their subscriptions.
I'm not surprised. He's a very successful businessman. You don't become successful businessman or woman if you're picking sides in everything that you do. And I think he just had reached his tolerance level. You know, he also saw the president but this is a person in a high level position that saw a sitting U.S. president get shot. You know, I think that deeply impacted him because as someone who has power and sway, that could be him, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All of a sudden you realize we need to be more accountable because there for the grace of God go I.
Absolutely. Where are you going to be spending the next few days? Obviously Trump's coming back to Pennsylvania. You got coverage plans or do you know all the details?
Well, I was in Allentown last night. I think he's in Reading tonight. I can't keep up with it. Tonight I'm going to a Dave McCormick, Nikki Haley event. And then I know he's going to finish it somewhere in Pittsburgh.
Is McCormick surging? What's your sense on that Senate race, too?
That's such a tide race.
Is it?
It really is. That could go either way.
Man,
whatever way the top of the ticket goes, that ticket will go.
Well, that's what we're going to be watching. Selena, get some rest if you can. I hope you have a big vacation plan. That's my wish for all of my pundit friends. But thank you so much. You're doing great coverage.
Thanks. Have a good evening.
Take care. SelenaZito.com is where you can find all of her work. And I didn't really touch too much on Bezos, and I want to get to that just for a second, because if you haven't read what he wrote in the Washington Post a couple of days ago, you should. I mean, he owns the Washington Post, and he really rips into journalism. He says, look, we've managed to fall below Congress. Our profession is now the least trusted of all. Something we're doing is clearly not working. Some of us have been criticizing what you're doing for a long time, right? And he said, let me give this analogy. Voting machines must meet two requirements. They must count the vote accurately, and people must believe that they count the vote accurately. The second requirement is distinct from and just as important as the first. Likewise with newspapers, we must be accurate. We must be believed to be accurate. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but we're failing on the second requirement. You're failing massively. You really are. And he knows that. Most people believe the media is biased. Anyone who doesn't see this is paying scant attention to reality, and those who fight reality lose. Reality is an undefeated champion. It would be easy to blame others for a long and continued fall in credibility and therefore decline in impact, but a victim mentality will not help. Complaining is not a strategy. We must work harder to control what we can control to increase our credibility. What Jeff Bezos wrote, and there's more, and it's very good, this is something that should be discussed thoroughly in the aftermath of this election with our friends at MSNBC and CNN and include Fox in the conversation. Although I've defended Fox because I think most people out there that watch NPR, I'd love to take the typical NPR viewer or listener, right?
All right.
NPR, whatever, PBS, right? Same interchangeable government subsidized. My sister loves NPR. I'd love to sit her in front of Brett Baer's show, which is about to get started here at 5, because I'd put Brett's show up against any of the news shows out there for not being opinionated, for just straight news. And I'd say that about a bunch of the news folks on Fox. Look, you got Jackie Heinrich is great. Peter's great. I mean, they have a great news staff. Obviously, they have opinion staff as well. But what Bezos wrote in this piece is so important. And, you know, guys like Bernie Goldberg, who wrote the book Bias about CBS News, has been onto this for a long time. I've been talking about media bias for 3 decades. And I think at this point, they've let it go so far that new media is completely taking over. And that's their own fault, certainly at the Washington Post and the New York Times. They don't even see what they're doing. Oh, we're down to 6 days. Can you believe it? One of our other great contributors, Josh Krossauer, who is a 97.1 FM Talk political insider, the editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider, regular on Fox, is with us. Josh, how are you?
It's, first of all, great to be back with you, Mark. And it's hard to believe we're less than a week away till the election.
Well, let me say this just sincerely to you, because I so much appreciate, I have a lot of great contributors here on this in the show, and you've been with me for a long time through about 8 different, you know, outlets that you've worked for, if we're being honest here, Josh. But I know how busy you are, and you're on Fox all the time, and the demands are high. So thank you so much, because you and I have talked politics for a long time. But here it is, only a few more days, and let me start with obviously the story of the day, the garbage story. And I guess maybe you can juxtapose this with the MSG story Trump had for a couple of days in the news cycle. So what do you make of this right now? Because it has taken on a life of its own, hasn't it?
Well, look, we always talk about October surprises. I don't think either development is going to make that much of a difference, but in a close race, every little development matters. And I think the biggest takeaway from it, Mark, is that Democrats were planning to go on offense in the last week by highlighting that talk show host's garbage rant against Puerto Rico at the MSG rally.
Right.
And now they can't do that. Now every time you mention the word garbage, Republicans are going to respond with Biden's admission that he believes a lot of the Trump supporters are garbage. So they've neutralized that issue, which was looking like a closing argument or part of a closing argument from the Harris campaign. So that tactically, that is a setback for Democrats. I think, I'm getting a lot of 2016 vibes with this election.
Yeah.
You know, with Hillary, when I that was my immediate reaction upon seeing the soundbite from Joe Biden. That was the deplorables election. This is the garbage election. This is all about vibes. We're looking at the blue wall states, which tipped at the last minute to Republicans in 2016. It looks like the polling suggests, well, there's mixed polling, but
yeah,
it does feel like the Republicans are confident about having a similar trifecta in 2024. And also the messaging. Harris is talking about saving democracy, the stakes being about democracy and less about the economy. That was the Hillary message, and also the gender gap and the fact that Harris has actually not been running as much on her gender identity, but lately with the focus on abortion rights and the Michelle Obama appeal to women, very similar to Hillary's closing message in 2016 as well. So what happened in 2016? That was a year Trump won those blue wall states for the only time, I think, since 1992. And won the election, and the polling seems to suggest we could see a similar result this time around.
And Josh, you know this because I brought this up with you, and one of my little data points from 2016 is Wisconsin, because I lived there. And I don't know how much this might happen now, but look, Trump, the fact of the matter is Trump did not get a whole lot more votes than Mitt Romney did 4 years behind that or before that. But the clear difference was Hillary Clinton had a quarter million, 250,000 votes fewer because people stayed home, African-Americans stayed home. Some of this manifested itself in Michigan as well. She's got a problem with African-American men in particular. I'm not so sure it doesn't, you know, kind of roll over into some African-American women who not necessarily will vote for Trump. But there's an issue there, I think. What are your thoughts about that aspect of these swing states?
Well, there are polls in the working class part of the Democratic coalition writ large. So, yes, black men, black working class men in Michigan, and not just Michigan, but Pennsylvania, all those states, that's a problem, not just for who they vote for, but also the turnout. And I think there's some real risk for the Democrats that the turnout in counties like, you know, Milwaukee and Dane County, Wayne County, Michigan, Philadelphia, and so on, are not going to be where they usually are for Democrats. There's a lot of evidence that the turnout is going to be not where it was in 2020, and maybe not where it was in 2016. And there's a margin issue. You mentioned black men. I think that's a real problem for the Harris campaign. It's also union members,
sure,
in those states. We're seeing continued slippage from, you know, those white working class union members that were solidly Democrat a decade ago. Now the trend line is in the other direction. Hispanic voters, I mean, that's why that garbage comment initially at Madison Square Garden was potentially damaging, because Hispanic working class voters, if you look at all the polls and you look at all the trend lines, they're moving a little bit to the Republican Party.
Right.
We'll see if that holds. But those are there are definitely chips in the coalition for the Democrats on the working class side of it. And that's, Michigan is a great example of that. They're, you know, black voters in Detroit. You've got union members across the state. It's a state that went for, I believe, Obama by double digits in 2012. And now it is definitely neck and neck between the candidates.
And then there's Pennsylvania. And I want to get your reaction to this. I thought this was fascinating. I like John Fetterman sometimes because he's a little like me in that he calls it like he sees it. And here's what he said about the support for Trump in his state.
You've said that Trump has a special connection with the people
100%.
Of Pennsylvania. Why? What is it that you see that he appeals to in your state?
There's a difference between not understanding, but also acknowledging that it exists. And anybody spends time driving around and you can see the intensity. It's astonishing.
Just anecdotal, or is that something that's pretty real right now in Pennsylvania? He's seeing it, right?
Oh, I would take John Fetterman's word for it, especially when he's speaking out against potential party interest. John Fetterman, by the way, cracked the code in 2022 against even my expectations. He at a time when he was running against Dr. Oz, he really overperformed in parts of the state like Erie and Northeast Pennsylvania, Scranton and Wilkes-Barre, in the blue collar parts of the state where I thought the Democratic Party was losing ground. But it was John Fetterman's background and
yes.
profile culturally that really connected with a lot of those swing voters. He's not seeing that with Kamala Harris. I mean, that's his way of saying
yeah.
Kamala Harris is not connecting as a San Francisco liberal, not connecting the same way I did in my Senate race 2 years ago. And he knows those voters. Those are the swing voters that went Democrat in 2022, voted for Josh Shapiro in the same election. They're not sold on Kamala Harris. Fracking has been a big issue in the state. She was against fracking in the 2020 campaign. She's obviously changed her view on that, but there's a lot of worry, and this is not just in Pennsylvania, it's across the country, that she has such a long track record of adopting pretty lefty positions, progressive positions, that there's not been a lot of persuasiveness that she's really come around. She's trying to have a more inclusive tone and maybe more inclusive message even, but on policy and substance, people are not convinced that she's going to govern as a moderate.
So let's go back to 2022, because this is a point that I've been making here for the last week or so, and I don't mean to be super repetitive with the audience, but I do think it's important because, you know, we're looking at some of these polling numbers in 2022, and the red wave was expected. I felt more confident than ever, and that didn't manifest itself. This is different. It's a presidential race, but, you know, obviously this thing could still go either way.
Well, look, I think there are three things that if you're the Trump campaign, I would be a little bit worried about. I mean, number one is the MSG rally and the fact that you're still playing to your hardcore base at a time when you need to make inroads with Nikki Haley voters, with people who agree with you on policy but don't like you personally. And that MSG rally did everything to remind people why they may even agree with Trump on a lot of issues but may not be voting for him. So that was one late break development that could go against Trump. You look at the polling, a lot of the New York Times Siena poll in particular, a lot more Harris or a lot more undecided voters or people who may change their mind are leaning towards Harris, not Trump. So a lot of Democrats think there may be a shy Harris vote among women in red states or undecided voters, Nikki Haley voters, who we heard about the shy Trump voters. I'm not hearing a lot of shy Trump voters this time around. In my neighborhood, which is pretty Democratic, I see a lot of Trump signs this time around. But I think there may be some shy Harris voters, people who don't like Harris. They don't like, obviously she hasn't given them much reason for moderates to vote for her, but, you know, maybe they don't want to tell, you know, the speculation is they may not want to tell their husbands or they may not want to come out and say they're a Harris supporter in a red state or a swing state, but they, in the privacy of the ballot, maybe they'll swing at that last minute way.
And that's fair. That's where some of the polling, we don't know how much to trust it. There's going to be some surprises. We always see surprises on election night. But I do think things, and I don't know if this is just something that is with me. Look, Josh, I didn't vote for Trump in 2016. And I kind of took a stand personally just because I felt like there was reprehensible behavior. Some of the people that are even on his team right now, like J.D. Vance, I think felt the same way. I could not be more enthusiastic about voting for Trump this time. And I know a lot of people like me who like might have been in the same camp or even, you know, 2 years ago, let's face it, we were talking about DeSantis. We got to move away from Trump. A lot of people in that camp, they've swung back because they see the writing on the wall with this other ticket. And the American people just don't buy her flip-flops. They just don't.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, on the fact that there are a lot more Trump voters that probably voted third party in 2016.
Yeah, right.
Of course, if you reallocate, you know, the third party vote in 2016 to Trump, Trump would have won in a landslide. I mean, it would have been a comfortable Trump win. A lot of people in that camp voted third party. So Hillary ended up winning the popular vote, even though I think there was sort of a silent majority of Republicans and then third party voters that were, you know, pretty anti-Hillary.
Yeah, so do those people, because that's my follow-up question would be about RFK and Elon Musk and Tulsi, and, you know, the Joe Rogan podcast featured a lot of talk about those three. Is that going to be something that significantly has an impact? We talked about it when RFK Jr. made the, you know, the switch a couple of months ago, but are you seeing a trend there or is that insignificant?
Well, sure. There's a realignment of sorts. Younger men in particular, but I think a lot of people are surprised that Gen Z men are trending or surprisingly supportive of Trump, unlike Gen Z women, right? You know, the youngest Americans that are eligible to vote. That's a core constituency that Trump has been appealing to throughout the campaign. They've listened to Joe Rogan's podcast. RFK appeals to them, perhaps. Tulsi Gabbard, not hawkish, very, very, very isolationist, or not in favor of a strong American presence overseas. That is the type of voter that Trump has made gains with in this election. That said, he's also lost some of those traditional conservative voters, the Liz Cheney voters, maybe even the Nikki Haley. I mean, that's why Kamala Harris is really making a play for the Nikki Haley voting Republicans, soft Republicans, anti-Trump Republicans. So there's a little movement in both directions in the electorate. My question is, big picture, does the gains that Harris may be making in the suburbs among affluent suburbanites, women in particular, is that going to overcome the inroads that Trump has been steadily making among all kinds of working class groups, from young men to Hispanics to African American voters in particular? So those are the cross currents right now in the electorate.
What are the chances, serious question here, that we know the result by even Wednesday morning, in your opinion?
I would bet against it.
Yeah, me too.
Pennsylvania, well, my read is that the state that's going to decide this election, if it's a close election especially, Pennsylvania, that is one of the slower, because of state rules, they can't start counting the votes until the polls close on election day, so it's going to be a slow count in Pennsylvania. So if that's the state that decides the election, if that's what either campaign needs to get over the top, it could take past Wednesday morning to figure out.
Have you, because we always talk baseball, Josh Kay, and, you know, both our teams didn't do very, very well. We have some questions about the St. Louis Cardinals moving forward. I've actually enjoyed this World Series and some of the postseason, and I don't like either of these teams, but, oh, my God, Freddie Freeman, that dude is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Yankee hater, so I'm by default
we get
rooting
it
for the Dodgers.
Right.
But my God, like this is for Major League Baseball, I'm glad they got this matchup to showcase the best talent. Shohei and Judge and Soto, who I love and miss as a Nationals fan.
I know.
it is good to see like the best in the sport playing against each other.
Yeah, right? We got a little of that too. We got Tommy Edman and Jack Flaherty, you know, so there's a little pain with that as well. I hope you have a wonderful vacation plan for after this election, Josh Krasar. Enjoy the final week if you can, and we will talk soon.
Thanks, Mark. Good luck on Election Day.
Get more at 971talk.com.